My name is Samson, and I can tell by the looks of some of your faces, you know my name. And I'm not surprised. I was the most famous man in my day. Everyone knew the name of Samson. And the enemies of mine, they spoke my name with fear. I'm not surprised you know my name, because I'm the strongest man of my day. I'm the strongest man who ever lived. If I was alive today, you not only would admit me into your Olympics, you would have to set up some special category for me. Maybe something like chariot throwing. Because whatever I entered, I'd win. I'm the strongest man that ever lived, bar none. I'm not stopping there, but he seems a little bit prideful. Some of you think I am exaggerating, overstating my case a little bit. Let me tell you some facts, and you make up your own mind as to whether you think my claims are true or whether it is not. One occasion, I fell in love. I didn't fall in love with the right kind of woman. She was not of my people. She was a Philistine, but a woman I wanted to marry in Timnah. My parents reluctantly gave in, allowing it to take place. But it was a long way from my town to Timnah, and I had to go and make arrangements. My parents didn't want to go, but I went. So I'm walking for a long time down the road, along the path where it's easy to get bored. It's easy to become distracted by the length of your trip. All around it was hilly, and there were rocks and bushes scattered, but you could see pretty well all around. And a wise man is the one who would keep, as he walked, his eyes looking and roving in case a situation arrived that the enemy lay in wait, waiting to attack you. But then I came close to a vineyard, and that's when it happened. It was then that I met the lion. Not the kind of lion you're thinking about, not the caged excuse for an animal that you've seen, the kind that sit around all day and eat at 10 to 4 when someone throws them some dead meat. Not that kind of a lion. I mean a real lion, a young lion, one who has learned to think on his feet, to live by its wits, one whose body is honed by constant action and constant killing, one with jaws so sharp it can snap the bones of an animal like that. Oh, okay, better than that. Better than that. And I'm walking along the road, thinking various things about the plans and the things that must be done. Suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, there's a roar designed to paralyze prey. And suddenly I see a blur of gold that is rocketing towards me. I don't know what you would have done in that instant. Maybe freeze. Maybe call for your mother. That usually works. Make a mess. Know what I did without a moment's hesitation, because there wasn't a moment to spare. As the lion came, as he leapt towards me, ready to kill, I bent down, grabbed it underneath, and as it passed, I pulled and I pulled, and you could hear the cracking of bones and the ripping of sinew, and suddenly, there it was in two pieces. I stood in awe of my own handiwork. As I looked down at what I had done to the lion, I realized I really was the strongest man that ever lived. still doubt me? On one occasion, the Philistines, they were the enemy of my people. They oppressed my people. They brutalized my people. They had weapons and they had iron. And they had the technology that we didn't have. They could come at will and decimate the flocks and steal what they wanted. They made life difficult. And they knew that I was the only person who could stand up to them. And one day, one day they came after I had done some damage to them. They came to the town of the people of Judah and said to them, nicely of course, "Give us Samson or we will wreak our vengeance on you." Now, 3,000 Israelites, men came to me from the tribe of Judah. They said, "Samson, we don't know how to handle this. We don't want to hand you over to the Philistines. But what can we do? We know that they will kill you, that they will destroy you, but what choice do we have? There are so many of them. How can we stand up to them?" "Guys, it's okay. They don't know who they're messing with. What I want you to do is to tie me up with 2 new ropes. Not what you are thinking of, not binder twine, not that yellow stuff that you use around the house. I'm talking about rope. I mean hemp rope, the kind that would be used at the seaport to be sure that the ships stay docked up. The big rope, the real rope. I said, tie me up with 2 new ropes. But you haven't a chance. Just do it, okay?" And they did. They tied me with those 2 new ropes, a little bit tighter than perhaps they needed to do, but they took me and put me at the end of a field with the Philistine hordes that were there and the army on the other side, some 15,000 soldiers. They left me there, kind of disappearing back from the scene so that they wouldn't get in the way, of course. And there I was. The Philistines couldn't believe their good luck. And they had to do so way, all they had to do was just threaten, I'm sorry. And the Jews rolled over on me, and they started to come. They knew that, boy, the person who got Samson, boy, there was a prize for him. The one who did that final thrust, the one who could hold my severed head in his hand, he was the one that would be remembered in Philistine lore. He would be remembered as the champion. To him would go the spoils of war. And they all wanted that. And they started heading down towards me, just wading through the helpless in front of them, and they began to run. 15,000 men. You could feel the ground shake as they got closer and closer and closer. And about halfway down, I get my stance. And I can feel the Spirit of the Lord coming upon me. And I begin to flex. And those new ropes, they were like charred flax. Suddenly, the guys at the front of the line charging weren't quite as eager as they had been. It seemed that they were willing to share the glory a little bit and let somebody else go first. Because things were a little different than what they thought they were going to be. And they started to run. But the people behind didn't realize what was happening. And they weren't stopping. They were running, pushing those in front towards me faster and faster. More and more, people started to get a little antsy. But they kept coming because they couldn't turn away. And as I looked around, I realized that they were unarmed. Only the Philistines had weapons. It was always that way when we fought the Philistines. Nothing around that I could use except a dead donkey. And I kicked at it and realized that it was relatively fresh. The teeth were still in the jawbone. I picked it up, and I had what I needed, and I took my stance. The guys in the front really wanted to let the other guys go first, but they didn't have any choice. And I didn't run, and I didn't stand still. I walked into them, and that jawbone on that donkey became my sword. And I swung it one way and another and another. And the Philistines I struck were knocked down, and the other soldiers around them. And they spun and hit one another, and the people began to fall and die. And they began to cry out and run and trample each other. And the disaster was enormous. And at the end of that encounter, 1,000 Philistines lay dead, and the others were running for their lives. Now I know what you're thinking. How could I know how many soldiers I had killed in that battle? I must have made up that number. I probably couldn't count more than the 200, they would think. No, I knew my numbers. My mama had learned me my numbers, just like the ones that you'd been learned. And I still use them just like you. One little, two little, three little Philistines. Four little, five little, six little Philistines. Seven little, eight little, nine little Philistines. 10 little Philistines, dead. I know my numbers. 15,000 to one. Still not sure? Okay, one more story. Another time I was in Gaza. I guess I was just bored. Gaza being a city by the seaside, a Philistine city, it would be kind of intriguing. So I went and began to mingle with the people there. I thought I had disguised myself. I thought there was no way that they would know who I was. And as I walked around, I saw a lady of the evening that caught my eye. And I knew it was wrong, but I decided to spend some time with her. About the middle of the night, I got up to leave. And as I came out on the street, I realized that I had not disguised my appearance very much at all. They knew I was there. The leaders of the city of Gaza realized they had Samson in town. And they decided that they would send for reinforcements in order to capture me and kill me. All they had to do was to hold me long enough for the other soldiers to arrive. It was relatively easy for them to do, actually. Their cities were surrounded by large walls, higher than you could throw a stone over, wide enough that you could ride a chariot around the top. It had huge stone walls to keep enemies out. But because the people needed to travel and go in and out, every city had a huge gate. The gate was considered the strength of the city. And it was strong, all right. It went from the ground up to the top of those walls. It was made of solid hardwood, some 6 feet thick. The kind of wood that John's always working with on his will letter. They were mounted on huge posts that were buried 10 to 15 feet deep in the ground. They were then attached with bronze hinges and reinforced by bronze metal bars. It was immense. And they locked those gates. And when they did, there was no way in or out. Samson was theirs. When I walked through those streets, I saw the shuttered windows. I heard them whispering behind me. I realized what it was that they had done. I don't know that you might have done something else different in that situation. Perhaps try to hide. Maybe go out and try and pick the lock. Well, I don't think so. Sneak out somewhere. That wasn't my style. That's not Samson. I wanted them to see what was going to happen. I didn't slink along the side. I walked straight and boldly right through town until I came to the main gate. I stood up in the front of the courtyard and then turned around to be sure that everyone could see who I was and what was going on. But it wasn't good enough just to get out of that town. I wanted to embarrass them. Those gates were the strength of their city, and I was going to be the one who stole them. At midnight, I got up and walked to those gates. I grabbed hold of that bar. Boy, I was glad they'd put it there. It was really just nice and handy to grab onto. And I began to pull. And I felt from the inside the warmth of God's Spirit that began to move in my body. And as it got hotter and hotter, and as I pulled harder and harder, I heard the creaks, and then the groans and the snapping, and finally it all came wrenching right out of the ground. A lesser man might have just dropped it, but I decided that would not be humiliating enough. So, not hearing any horns blowing or soldiers raising any cries, even though my ears were still ringing, I put the thing up to my shoulder, carrying it all the way to the top of that big hill. I'm the strongest man that ever lived. No question, no argument. But as Paul Harvey would say, and now the rest of the story. I want to read you two verses from Judges. You guys have got the Bible there. The first one reveals the plans of the Philistines, and the second one will reveal Samson's plans. Starting with verse 2. When the Gadites were told, "Samson has come here," they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. They were quiet all night, saying, "In the morning, when it is daylight, we will kill him." Samson was right, believing that the Gazites weren't just wanting to capture him. They wanted to kill him once and for all. Now listen to verse 3. Now Samson lay until midnight, and at midnight he arose and took hold of the doors of the city gate and the two posts, and he pulled them up along with the bars. Then he put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the mountain, which is opposite Hebron. Now, I want you to try and visualize something of the task that was before me. To be able to do that, you'll have to take a walk. The weather this morning is fabulous, and you decide to go walking and see how far it is that you can go before nightfall. You have some good friends up in Shingletown, and won't they be surprised when you knock at their door? And you're hungry and you want to be fed. Shortly after you started out, you watch the sun come up over Mount Lassen and the other peaks as you move along. After several hours, the road begins to climb, and it's getting harder to maintain your pace. Half an hour later, you see a sign along the road that has the number 1,000 on it, and you feel a little bit better, because you must be almost there. To confirm your assumptions, you ask the first person you see, "Just how much further is it to get up to Shingletown?" They weren't certain about the number of the miles they'd have to go, but they knew that you still had a little more than 2,000 plus feet climb to get to that altitude. It's a good thing you had a cell phone with you. If you could walk the whole distance at a constant pace of 2 miles an hour, your trek of 27 miles from here up to Shingletown would only take you 13 and a half hours to get there. I carried Gaza's doors, gateposts, bar, and all on my back in the dark, uphill for 28 miles to the top of the ridge opposite Hebron, and I left everything there. Now, that reference is to Mount Hermon, which, by the way, has an altitude of 9,322 feet. Could you guess the altitude where he left? That's that door up there. I'm sure it was still there. Okay. The thing that bothers me is that when people remember me, they do remember my strength, but they also remember me as a failure. You see, when I was born, my parents had difficulty having children, and my birth was announced by an angel of the Lord, by the angel of the Lord, by God himself in the flesh. He came to my parents and said, "You're going to have a son." And his mission in life, his purpose, his ministry is to set Israel free from the Philistines. My mission was clear. My ministry was laid out in front of me. And the angel of the Lord said clearly, the only thing you need to remember, the only thing he must remember, is that he's going to be raised. He's going to live as a Nazarite. Three simple rules. My mom told them to me over and over again. Parents are like that sometimes. Don't forget, you can't touch anything unclean. Don't go near them. Don't touch that carcass, any dead thing. I know, Mom, I know. You've told me a million. Samson, don't go down there. That's where they all drink, and that's where it's served, and it's fermented stuff. Not fermented drink is to be touched by you, not at all. My dad said to me, Samson, remember, never cut your hair. Not many fathers have said that to their sons. Not many through the centuries, huh? I know, Dad, that it's the visible sign that I'm a Nazarite, and everyone will know. So unusual. You know, parents can be such a pain at times. I remember one time heading back to Timnah for the second time. I had gone the first time to set up the arrangements for the wedding with this woman, and the day came when the wedding would be celebrated and consummated. And I was excited about that, and I was heading back down along that same road where I had traveled before. And as I walked and as I moved along, boy, there I grew up. It was hot, and talking about it, when the sun comes out, and in those days when it really beats down on you, it just kind of sucks the life right out of you. I know I'm strong, but the sun, ooh, I'm walking, and it's getting worse, and I don't know I can keep on going. And I'm kind of wondering how long, and I need something to eat. And maybe out of curiosity, more than anything, when I came to the spot where I won that victory over the lion, I guess I did go more out of curiosity, maybe to satisfy my ego or something. And I walked over, and there was honey. The bees had nested there, and there was a honeycomb right there. And I was in and eating without giving it a second thought. And there was honey dripping down my arms and over my beard, and into my mouth. And I felt like when you finally get into something and you feel the strength just coursing through your body again, and oh, it feels so good, I knew now that I could make it all the rest of the journey. And then I remembered what my mother had said, what the angel had said, that I wasn't to touch any unclean thing. And I realized that by doing it, I was touching the carcass. I'd broken my vow. And I waited. And I looked up in the sky for lightning to come or for God to swallow me with an earthquake. But nothing happened. Huh. I think my parents were wrong. Nothing happened. Huh. Maybe sin isn't that serious. I went on to Timnah, and we threw a party. Boy, one thing you can know about the Philistines, they are, of course, military people that live off of hunting and killing, but they really know how to throw a party. Boy, the Jewish guys, when they threw a party, they didn't come anywhere close to what these guys did. Their wedding feast went on for days, and boy, it was rocking. Boy, it was wild. And it cost me a fortune. You've got to be careful when you go into another culture like that. You want to be sure that you're culturally sensitive and appropriate. So I made sure I spent the money for what I needed to, with all the local breads and cheeses and meats. And these guys were all into drinking, and all the wines and the beers. And they tell me that it's appropriate. And so I'm going to go for it. And the party went on day after day and night after night. It was a marvelous celebration. I'm trying to prove to them that I'm one of the guys, a man's man. And so everyone else is drinking it down. Well, what's one Philistine beer? Oh my goodness, that stuff tastes terrible. And what in the world are they? And then I realized this was number two. I didn't pause for quite as much. I wasn't afraid quite as much, but still I wondered what God would do. Then nothing happened. Well, I think this sin thing is overrated. After all, the first two vows were broken and nothing happened. Life went on. Not with that woman, by the way. Things didn't work out there. There's another story there. A lot of dead Philistines are at the end of that story. But life went on. Then one day, I thought I had met the answer to my prayers. I met a woman. Not just an old woman. I met the woman. She had black hair. She had olive skin. She had eyes that just melt you. This was a woman. Her name was... So you know her. You've heard of her. Uh-huh. That's right. Her beauty... Okay, I shouldn't have gone down that trail. Sorry. Her beauty was legendary. She just captured your imagination. She just enthralled you. Her beauty, her wit, her charm, everything about her. This woman was the perfect woman. She had everything except for one little thing. She was perfect, except she was a nag. I mean, she was easy on the eyes, but she was a nag. When she got something under her skin, she just couldn't let it go. She'd go and go and go for it. And she wanted to know the secret of my strength. Samson, she said, if you love me, we will have an honest, transparent relationship. Tell me the secret of your strength. She flattered her eyes and did this to her hair. Something like that. I don't have hair up there. But anyway. And I broke. I said, if you just tie me up with some fresh thongs, then my strength is gone. She was happy. We had a good night. In the middle of the night, suddenly she says to me, Samson, the Philistines are here. And I saw a bunch of those soldiers at the door. Half in, and I got up and went like this, or however he would have broken those things, okay? Lost my place here. He killed them, you're right. So, as if they were nothing, not them, the stuff he was tied up with. But one didn't. They found him in the morning. But she was disappointed in me. Samson, you haven't been entirely forthcoming with me. Women, I said, well, if you tie me up with some new ropes that have never been used, that will do it. Oh, well, I'm glad we finally got past this in our relationship, Samson. That's good. Good night. Well, that night, Samson, the Philistines are here, was the cry that she gave me. Two new ropes, bang, they were gone, like flax, like charred flax again. The Philistines were there. I didn't catch any of them. They were gone a little bit faster this time because they'd heard what happened the night before. Oh, Samson, this is a problem that we have. I said, look, it's really the hair. If you braid it in a certain way, then the strength is gone. Well, as long as, well, you can trust me. In the middle of the night, Samson, the Philistines are here. And they just kind of peeked in the window this time. And I got up and was after them like nobody's business, and they were gone. Delilah told me, I cannot go forward with a guy who cannot be honest. I said, look, just give it a rest. This doesn't involve you. It's personal. Oh, Samson, Samson, don't you love me? Won't you? Oh, man, I could tell you, I'd rather be working with or facing 15,000 soldiers than to have her torturing me. But this woman, she was just driving me to distraction. She would not give up. Finally, I said to her that the one vow that I had never broken is that of cutting my hair. As I looked into her eyes, I was sure that I could trust her. That night, I fell asleep, my head in her lap, trusting her completely. She had gotten someone to come in while I was sleeping and cut my hair. She tied me up again. Then she called, Samson, the Philistines are here. Samson, the Philistines are here. And I got up as I had before and thought, ah, man, this is getting old. You know what I mean. We've been this way before, and these guys are just barely peeking in with one eye in the window, taking a good quick look. They weren't prepared to come in and give their lives on this line. And I got up. I saw them coming and said, yeah, come on at me, guys. I pushed against the rope, and then I pushed again. This was new rope, and I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know why it wouldn't break as before. And I pushed harder and harder. The soldiers at the door crept a little bit and then crept a little bit closer and a little bit closer. And finally, they realized that the strength was gone. It had left me. I began to move around and see what else I could do. And I took down a couple of the guys. But there were too many of them. And more grabbed me and held me and then pinned me down. And as I turned to look at Delilah, I couldn't feel the hair on the back of my neck. I realized it was gone. And as I looked at her and cried out, why, Delilah? I saw them pay her. She had sold me out. And the last thing I saw was a knife of one of those soldiers as he came toward me to steal my sight. The pain in my face, I didn't know how I could stand it. The blood, the agony, oh God. The soldiers laughed at me. They jeered the champion of Israel. We have him now. Even if his strength comes back, he's blind. He's ours. He will never be able to take us on again. They led me by the hand, knowing I couldn't resist, down into the bowels of the building. Down where they had a grinding wheel, where they unhitched the ox, and tied me to that wheel. They said, your job now is to grind grain to feed Philistine warriors. The pain of my eyes was nothing like the pain of my heart. It was in the days, in the weeks, and maybe the months, I don't know, I lost all sense of time without my sight. As I was walking around and around and around, all that I could think of was that God had chosen me. That God had said I would be the one to set Israel free. And I would never do it. I would never be able to fill God's calling. Never be able to fill God's mission. Never be able to do the ministry he had called me to do. It was gone, and I would never be able to get it back. Time went on. The Philistines decided to really celebrate. They got all the important people together in the temple of Dagon, that false idol of a heathen god. They brought all the people there to celebrate his greatness because the champion of the God of Israel had been defeated. And I was brought out for sport. I was brought out to entertain the masses. They sent a servant to come get me. I had taken on thousands of their soldiers, and they didn't have a chance. And now they could control me with just a boy. He led me into the temple, and the palace erupted with laughter, erupted with blasphemy against God. What hurt my heart so much was that I was the one who had allowed this to happen. That I couldn't blame anyone. I couldn't blame God. I couldn't blame my parents. I couldn't blame anyone for any of this. I was the one who knew. And I was the one who had made those choices. And God's name was being defamed because of me. They led me to the front, and I asked the boy if I could lean against something. I wasn't the man I used to be. I put my hand against the pillar and then felt it. I wrapped my arm around it. I realized that it was the main supporting girder. It was not a normal post. This was important structurally to the whole building. I reached out my other hand and realized that there was a second one beside me. And I prayed one last time. God, I don't deserve it. And God, I've missed the mark of what you called me to do. But will you allow me to do something, at least to stop the blasphemy? I took my stance that I'd taken so many times and began to push. And as I did, I felt the hair on the back of my neck brush. And I realized that the hair had grown back in the time I had been grinding grain. And as I prayed and as I pushed, suddenly for one last time, I felt the surge and the rush of God's Spirit through my body one last time. Finally, the arms responded as they had done so many times. And as I pushed, I began to hear the groaning and the creaking of the building. And I began to hear the cries of the people who were there as they cried out to Dagon. As I heard them cry out for Dagon while cursing the God of Israel, I gave it one last push. And the roof that was on top descended. And I killed more people in my death than I did in my life. But I knew in that instant that I would always be remembered as being a strong man, but always thought of as a failure. Why? Because I didn't accomplish what God had for me in my life. God had given me a mission. He had given me a purpose, and he had given me all the strength and ability I needed to do it. But I traded it away. I squandered it away on sin. I thought I could sin and it wouldn't affect me and my ministry. And I was wrong. I was the strongest man who ever lived. Nobody could stop me. Nobody could take anything away from me. But I gave away my ministry in exchange for the pleasures of sin. Your ministry, what God has created you to do, will be different than what he had created for me to do. But I'm here to tell you, as one who has learned the hard way, nobody can take your ministry from you. There is no enemy so great that God isn't able to preserve you and enable you to do what he has created you to do. But I'll also tell you that you can give your ministry away. You can't allow sin to steal it. What I learned was that nobody sins and gets away with it. Never. Not you, and certainly not me.